Forsyte Chronicles by John Galsworthy, dramatized by David Spencer. With Dirk Bogarde as Galsworthy, Michael Horden as Old Jolyon, Alan Howard as Soames Forsyte, and Diana Quick as Irene. Episode 1.
Mr. Jolyon Forsyte, at home in Stannard Gate on June the 15th at 4 o'clock to celebrate the engagement of his granddaughter, Miss June Forsyte, to Mr. Philip Bostinet.
All the eldest sons of the Forsyte family were called Jolyon. In 1886, Old Jolyon, as he was known in the family, to differentiate him from his son, Young Jolyon, was 80 years of age and the head of the Forsyte family. Although his sister Anne was the firstborn, he was the eldest son of Superior Dorset Forsyte.
To Mr. and Mrs. James Forsyte, Park Lane.
James was one of the Forsyte twins, Swithin being the other. They were 75 years of age. Though both of them were over 6 feet in height, Swithin was a man of bulk. The fat and the lean of it, Old Jolyon called these brothers. James was very lean.
An engagement, Emily. I wonder if Jolyon's allowing June to become engaged to a man who pays his duty calls in a hat like the one that fellow wore.
The hat. Like an artist forever seeking to discover the significant trifle which embodies the whole character of a scene or place or person, so those unconscious artists, the Forsytes, had fastened by intuition on Philip Bosseni's hat.
To Mr. Swithin Forsyte, Hyde Park Mansions.
Swithin, James's twin, had never married. No, not he. Since his retirement from house agency, a profession deplorable in his estimation, especially as to its auctioneering department, Bulky Swithin had abandoned himself to naturally aristocratic tastes.
Bosseni, being an architect, is not in itself a sufficient reason for wearing such a hat. I know two architects who would never have worn such a hat upon a call of ceremony in the London season. Dangerous! Dangerous!
A story was undoubtedly told that Philip Bosseni had paid his duty call to Aunts Anne, Julie, and Hester in a soft grey hat. Not even a new one. A dusty thing with a shapeless crown.
To Miss Anne Forsyte, Miss Hester Forsyte, and Mrs. Septimus Small. To Mr. Timothy Forsyte, Bayswater Road.
Aunt Anne and Hester, the Forsyte maids, and Julie, short for Julia, lived in the house of Timothy, the youngest Forsyte brother. Julie, who, not in her first youth, had so far forgotten herself as to marry Septimus Small, a man of poor constitution. She had survived him for many years.
So extraordinary, my dear. So odd, that hat.
Hester is rather short-sighted, but passing through our little dark hall, she tried to shoo it off a chair, taking it for a strange, disreputable cat.
Tommy has such disgraceful friends.
Hester was quite disturbed when it did not move.
And when we told June, we didn't think she ought to let him wear it. She said, oh, what does it matter? Phil never knows what he's got on.
A man not to know what he has on. Outrageous!
To Mr. and Mrs. Roger Forsyte and family, Prince's Gardens.
Roger, the fifth brother, only 73 years of age, was that remarkable Forsyte who had conceived and carried out the notion of bringing up his four sons to a new profession, the collection of house property.
Come now, should I have paid that visit in that hat?
No, Dad.
It would never have come into your head.
The hat was obviously worn as a practical joke.
And you, George, are a connoisseur of practical jokes.
Very haughty. The wild buccaneer.
This mole, the buccaneer, was bandied from mouth to mouth till it became the favourite mode of alluding to Bosinney.
To Mr. and Mrs. Soames, Forsyte. Knightsbridge.
Soames Forsyte. James's fastidious son was now considered the eldest of the children since for 14 years no Forsyte had mentioned young Jolyon's scandalous departure from the family nest. Skin-like immaculateness had grown over Soames, as over many Londoners. Impossible to conceive of him with the hair out of place. A collar unglossed.
So, Irene, your friend June is to be engaged to Philip Bosinney, an architect, I believe. We must take a look at him.
I hope it will bring June happiness.
June's happiness is of no great consequence to me. Even so, I fear the worst.
To Mr. and Mrs. Nicholas Forsyte, Ladbroke Grove. To Mr. and Mrs. Amen.
Anna Forsyte!
Julie!
Anna Forsyte!
Cover Prudence up! Timothy, my dear!
Smither will take her downstairs after we leave.
I saw the carriage waiting, and I was certain I was going to be late.
Anne is not down yet, Esther.
It would never do to be late.
My dear, Anne is never late.
Well, I wonder at her going at all. She so seldom leaves the house now.
This engagement is a solemn occasion.
My dear.
Julie, isn't that the silver brooch your husband gave you? You haven't worn it for years.
On serious family occasions, one must make an effort. Poor Septimus. He was never strong. Oh, Anne, I've been so uneasy. This Bosinney. Is it wise? That hat.
Now you know better than to question your sister, Julie. Anne is saving her voice.
Will young Jolyon be there?
Julie!
But as June's father...
He will not be there. How could he be there? He left this family 14 years ago when he ran off with that governess.
Anne, your voice!
Joe was my favourite. I see we have all purchased new fans. Very colourful. It's good that at times of such danger, all members of the family should burnish themselves up.
Mr. and Mrs. James Forsyte. Mr. Swithin Forsyte.
Those privileged to be present at a family festival of the Forsytes have seen a charming and instructive sight, an upper middle-class family in full plumage. But whosoever of these favoured persons has possessed the gift of psychological analysis, a talent without monetary value and properly ignored by the Forsytes, has gleaned from a gathering of this family evidence of that mysterious, concrete tenacity which renders a family so formidable a unit of society, so clear a reproduction of society in miniature. He's like one who, having watched a tree grow from its planting, one day will see it flourishing with bland, full foliage, in an almost repugnant prosperity, at the summit of its efflorescence.
I've just been telling Philip about Superior Dosset Forsyte, Aunt Hester.
Oh, yes, June. He was my father, Mr. Bosinney.
Funny name?
Funny?
It was a nickname given him by his cronies.
Why?
Father never liked being called a Dorsetshire man. He always said he was born just over the border in Devonshire. He thought Dorsetshire people were rather a cocky lot.
He used funny expressions like that.
What did he do?
I don't recollect that he did anything. At least not in my time.
He was an owner of houses, I believe. Is that correct, Jolyon?
Who was that?
Father, Superior Dosset. What was he like, Grandfather?
Hard, thick sort of man. Not much refinement about him. Builder.
Julian takes after mother.
I remember he used to drink Madeira. But you must ask your Aunt Anne.
Only she is saving her voice.
The family. My own flesh and blood. This is my world, and I've never really known any other. I am the eldest by some years, and I've known all their little secrets, their illnesses, engagements, marriages, whether they were making money. They are my delight, my property, and yet, why this premonition of danger? If only June's father had not run away with that foreign girl. But there was no public scandal. His wife sought for no divorce, and when she died, June married that woman, had children. Oh, if only he were here. But he has forfeited that right. Such a promising young fellow. I was so proud of him. But the Soames, he's my eldest nephew now. He can be relied upon, and there's that beautiful wife of his, Irene, so tall, so elegant. But is it true, I wonder? They say she has been asking for a separate room. Soames would never agree to that, and yet there is danger.
Did you ever see such a collection of runty two people?
I've just taken a look at him, George.
Looks as if he might make a bolt of it. The dashing buccaneer.
He's a very singular-looking man.
And she's a little bit of a thing, Eustace. All that red-gold hair.
Oh, June's all hair and spit.
The buccaneer looks as if he's having a joke all to himself.
Who is that, June?
That's Cousin George.
No, the tall lady in grey. She's been watching us with such a kind smile on her face. The first I've seen.
I've been waiting for her. This is my cousin Soames' wife. Irene! This is Philip. Philip, Irene is my greatest chum. Please be good friends, you two.
I'm sure we shall.
How do you do, Mr. Bisson?
Introduce me to...
Philip, this is my cousin, Soames Forsyth. Soames, Philip Bassini.
I hear you build houses.
No, I design houses. Others build them.
Good architects make a good living, I believe.
Mediocre architects do. Good ones have to wait for people with vision.
Indeed. Vision.
And Philip's a very good one. Really, Soames, money isn't everything.
Perhaps.
I'm certain Mr. Bassini is a man of talent. And I'm sure he's going to make you very happy, my darling.
Oh, he will. He will. He has.
I hope you'll be as good a friend to both of us as you have been to June.
But of course.
In a crowd like this, it's a relief to find a person of good taste.
Why should you think I have good taste?
By the clothes you choose to wear. And the way you wear them.
There are many objects in this room, Mr. Bassini, that are not necessarily of good taste, but are certainly of some value.
About the Forsythes that day, there was a more than ordinarily groomed look. An alert, inquisitive assurance. A brilliant respectability. As though they were attired in defiance of something. They were on their guard.
I wonder at Julian's allowing this engagement, Esther. I mean, they tell me there's no chance of their getting married for years. This young Bosini's got nothing.
Forsyth girls have become engaged to men without fortunes before this, James, and sometimes married them.
Yes, so when Winifred married Darty, I made him bring every penny into the settlement. It's a lucky thing, too. They'd have had nothing by this time. I couldn't help Irene's having no money. Soames was in such a hurry. not quite thin dancing attendance on her. No, it's my opinion that it's just as well as it is. But where's Timothy? Hasn't he come with you?
No, James, he did not think it wise, with so much diphtheria about. He's so liable to take things.
Well, he takes good care of himself. I can't afford to take the care of myself that he does. He's seen so seldom now.
My dear, Timothy is the baby of the family.
Yes, and has invested all his money in 3% consols.
Timothy is very cautious.
Uncommonly cautious. I wouldn't be happy with less than 4% for my money. And I don't know any other member of the family who would either.
Mrs. Soames is a beautiful woman. She's making that young man with the awful hat laugh, almost as if he were at ease. Yes, James is right. It's just as well as it is. If Irene has no money, she'll not be so foolish as to do anything unsteady.
Well, Nick, how are you?
Bad. Bad all week. Can't sleep at night. Doctor can't tell why. He's a clever fellow. I shouldn't have him, but I get nothing out of him but bills.
Doctors. I've had all the doctors in London for one or another of us. No satisfaction to be got out of them. They tell you anything. They're Swithin now. Now, what good have they done him? There he is. He's bigger than ever. He's enormous. They can't get his weight down. I mean, look at him.
Ah, Nick, James, how are you? How are you, Nick?
We were just saying that you don't get any thinner.
Thinner? I'm in good case. Not one of your thread papers like you.
Well, I'm very well in myself, but my nerves are out of order. The least thing worries me to death. I shall have to go to Bath.
Bath? Tried Harrogate, that's no good. What I want is sea air, nothing like Yarmouth. Now, when I go there, I sleep.
My liver's very bad, dreadful pain, yeah.
I don't want to be exercise. I get a pain there, too.
Exercise? Well, I take plenty. I never use the lift at the club.
Hey, I take a combine.
How are you, Uncle?
Oh, huh? How are you?
Oh, I'm happy.
I hear you're going to Wales tomorrow to visit your young man's aunt.
Yes, I am.
You'll have a lot of rain there.
Rain in June?
In Wales, yes. This bowl isn't real old Worcester. Now, that set I gave your mother when she married was the genuine thing.
Well, Aunt Anne?
Soames.
And what do you think of the engagement?
Very nice for the young man, and he's a good-looking young fellow, but I doubt if he's quite the right lover for dear June.
She'll tame him. Oh, this luster's genuine old lacquer. You can't get it nowadays.
And how is dear Irene?
Pretty well. Complains she can't sleep. She sleeps a great deal better than I do.
Perhaps it will be just as well for her not to see so much of June. She's such a decided character, dear June.
I don't know what Irene sees in that little flippity-gibbet. Yes, genuine old lacquer.
They'd all done so well for themselves, these Forsythes, that they were all what is called of a certain position. They had shares in all sorts of things, not as yet with, well, with the exception of Timothy, in consols, for they had no dread in life like that of 3% for their money. From their father, Superior Darcet, the builder, they inherited a talent for bricks and mortar.
How much did you give for it, Julian?
No. About 4.5.
Mm.
Has 22 years to run.
22 years to... Well, that's the very house I was after. Oh, you've given too much for it. It's not that I want it. I mean, it wouldn't suit my purpose at that price. Yeah. Soames knows the house. Well, he'll tell you it's too dear. His opinion's worth having.
I don't get a fig for his opinion.
Well, you'll have it your own way. It's a good opinion. They tell me June's going to Wales. You'll be lonely tomorrow.
Oh, why should I be lonely?
Well, what do you do with yourself? You'd better come and dine with us.
No. No, no, thank you, James. I'll not be lonely. Not at all.
Among the last of the departing guests, the fourth and fifth brothers, Nicholas and Roger, walked away together, directing their steps alongside Hyde Park towards the Praed Street station of the Underground. Like all other Forsytes of a certain age, they kept carriages of their own and never took cabs if by any means they could avoid it.
Yes, she's a good-looking woman, that wife of Soames's. I'm told they don't get on.
She's no money. What are you doing with your umbrella, Roger?
Taking a lunar at the different heights of the houses. Interesting measurements. Property will get taller still. What was her father, Nick? Irene's father.
Oh, Heron was his name. Professor, so they tell me.
No, there's no money in that.
They say her mother's father was cement.
Oh.
He went bankrupt.
Yes. Soames will have trouble with her. You mark my words, he'll have trouble. She's got a foreign look.
Pretty woman.
How did he get hold of her? She must cost him a pretty penny in dress.
Anne tells me he was half cracked about her. She refused him 5 times. James, he's nervous about it, I can see.
Ah. I'm sorry for James. He had trouble with that son-in-law of his, Darty.
Irene's too pale for me. The figure's capital.
I call her distinguished-looking. That young Bassini will never do any good for himself. They say at Burkitt's he's one of those artistic chaps. Got an idea of improving English architecture. No, there's no money in that. I should like to hear what Timothy would say to it. Well, here we are. What class are you going? I go second.
Oh, second for me. You never know what you may catch. Always travel first.
Always a stubborn beggar, Nick.
Cantankerous chap, Roger. Always was.
Ah, Parfit. How long has the carriage been back from taking Miss June to the station?
It returned at 2, sir.
2. Then let him come round at 6:30.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and Parfit?
Sir?
Put my dress clothes out. I shall dine at the club.
Very good, sir.
Lonely. That's what James said. You'll be lonely. A poor thing, James. Always has been. But I bought that house over his head and serve him right for sticking at the price. The only thing the fellow thinks of is money. Can't get good cigars nowadays. Have I given too much, though? House wants a lot doing to it, and I shall want all my money before this affair of June's is done. I ought never to have allowed the engagement. When June takes a thing into her head, there's no stopping her. Continually taking up with lame ducks of one sort or another.
Philip's so splendid, Grandfather. He's often lived on cocoa for a week.
And he wants you to live on cocoa, too?
No. He's getting into the swim now.
I know more about swims than you do.
Oh, Grandfather. Dear Grandfather.
No, you're all alike. You won't be satisfied till you've got what you want. If you must come to grief, you must. I wash my hands of it. I shan't be able to give you much. Perhaps this, what's his name, will provide the cocoa. A bad business. She'll have trouble with the fellow. That's as plain as a pikestaff. Just like her father. Just like her father. No, I'll not think of him. Bassini has no more idea of money than a cow. As to June rushing down to Wales to visit his aunts, I fully expect their old cats.
Grandfather came from the country, didn't he, Dad?
Real country, yes.
Isn't this real country?
It used to be. Hampstead was a village. They'll build and build here. Look at the monkey, Joe.
He's taken off his hat. He's bowing like a real gentleman, Dad.
Yeah, give him a penny, Joe. He looks almost white in the sunlight. What sunlight? What sunlight? Such weather. There's no weather now. Every Sunday, he and I, along the Spaniards Road to Highgate, to Child's Hill, back over the heath again to dine at Jack Straw's castle. How delicious cigars were then.
I want to trot, Dad. Make the pony trot.
Hold on then, Joe. Don't fall off.
Run, Dad, run.
Don't fall off. Don't fall off. Don't fall off. Oh, Joe. 14 years. But I had to think of little June. No half measures. You were really too young to marry then, Joe. I should have put a spoke in the wheel. Crash came in only 4 years. No, I couldn't have approved of his conduct. June was tiny and helpless. She had to prevail. Oh, I'll dine at the club.
Good evening, Mr. Forsyte.
Good evening.
What would you like for dinner, sir?
Soup, white-baked cutlets.
And a tart.
And a tart.
You always have that.
It's my favourite.
I'll have soup, white-baked cutlets, and a tart.
Very good, sir.
And my usual pint of champagne.
Yes, sir.
If only Joe were with me now. Nonsense. He used to belong to a club. A hodgepodge, best cook in London. But no man can betray his principles without betraying his family and his class. I'll go to the opera. It's Fidelio. Not one of those newfangled German pantomimes by that fellow, well, Wagner. The pretty women. House used to be full of pretty women. I used to come here nearly every night. The greatest opera girl of my day. There's no opera now. That fellow Wagner's ruined everything. No melody left, no voices to sing it. Joe must be 40 by now. I wasted 14 years of the life of my only son.
Dad, do you think I could take my white mice?
Well, my boy, I don't know. Perhaps they're a bit young for Eton. Place thinks a lot of itself, you know.
Yes, Dad. Did you have white mice, Dad?
No, Joe. We weren't as civilized as all that in my young day. He's married now. Respectable. Where's that club Joe belonged to? I could... No. Nonsense. Leave things as they are.
Dad!
How are you, my boy? You've grown. More of a man altogether.
You look well, Dad.
Middling. Joe, I should like to hear what sort of water you're in. I suppose you're in debt.
No, I'm not in debt.
Oh. If you're going my way, I can give you a lift.
Thanks, Dad.
You might like to come in.
No, I...
June's not there. Went off today on a visit. I suppose you know she's engaged to be married.
Already?
Will you come?
Yes, Dad.
Refreshing tea. I like it to taste.
Yes.
And it made me money. I can talk to you, my boy. It's not much good telling June that property in the Soho quarter's going up in value.
What's June like now?
A little thing. They say she's like me, but that's their folly. She's more like your mother. Same eyes and hair.
Ah. And she's pretty?
Not bad looking. A regular Forsyte chin. It'll be lonely here when she's gone, Joe.
What do you do with yourself, Dad? I suppose she's wrapped up in him.
Yes. It'll be miserable work living here alone. I don't know how it's to end. I wish to goodness you'd... The question is, what had I better do with this house?
Yes, it's large. But I can't see you living in a smaller place.
Cool. I must go to bed.
Yeah. Goodbye, Dad.
Goodbye, my boy. Take care of yourself.
In Swithin's orange and light blue dining room, facing the park, the round table was elegantly laid. Everything betokened that love of beauty so deeply implanted in each family which has had its own way to make into society. Swithin had indeed an impatience of simplicity, a love of ormolu, which had always stamped him amongst his associates as a man of great, if somewhat luxurious, taste. The perfect luxury of his latter days had embedded him like a fly in sugar.
How many bottles of champagne, Adolf?
Three, sir.
Good. Screw them deep into the ice. Warm champagne is so unpalatable.
Yes, sir.
Three bottles. Jolyon only drinks a glass, or perhaps two. He's so careful of himself. James can't take his wine nowadays. The Nicholases. Oh, I shouldn't wonder if they swill water. Soames doesn't count. These young nephews can't drink. Mrs. Soames, she'll appreciate what she drinks. It's a pleasure to give her good wine. A pretty woman, knows how to dress, sympathetic to me. Adolf, put in another bottle.
Yes, sir.
Oh, and Adolf, the least touch of the West India when you come to the ham?
Yes, sir.
Mrs. Septimus Small.
Ah, well, Julie.
My dear, Anne's been asking for you. You haven't been near us for an age.
Anne is getting very shaky. She ought to have a doctor.
Mr. and Mrs. Nicholas Forsyth.
Oh, well, Nicholas, Francis, you look as if you had a successful day, Nick.
I have. I have.
Hmm?
At last, after great difficulties, I've succeeded in our scheme for bringing some tribe from Upper India to work in the gem mines of Ceylon.
Indians?
Tamils or something. Altogether cheaper. It'll double the output of the mines.
Mm.
For want of a few hundred of these fellows, we haven't paid a dividend for years. And look at the price of the shares. Can't get 10 shillings for them. It'll benefit the British Empire.
Mr. and Mrs. James Forsyth. Mr. and Mrs. Soames Forsyth.
Well, James, well, Emily.
Soames. How are you?
And you, Mrs. Soames.
Also well, Uncle Swithin.
I had no lunch.
You'll be hungry then.
Yes, it's not like Julian to be late. I suppose it'll be June keeping him.
People in love are always late.
They've no business to be. Some fashionable nonsense.
Tell me what you think of my new star, Uncle Swithin.
Mm. 11 diamonds? Who gave you that?
Soames.
I dare say you're dull at home. Any day you like to come and dine with me, I'll give you as good a bottle of wine as you'll get in London.
Miss June Forsyth, Mr. Julian Forsyth, Mr. Bo Swain.
Good. Dinner now, dinner.
Family dinners of the Forsytes observe certain traditions. Now, there are, for instance, no hors d'oeuvre. And the reason for this is unknown. A theory among the younger members trace it to the disgraceful price of oysters. It is more probably due to a desire to come to the point, to a good, practical sense deciding at once that hors d'oeuvres are but poor things.
Saddle of mutton, south down of cock.
Yeah, not as good as Welsh.
Dartmoor's best.
Timothy saddle the mutton quite heartily, but he says he's afraid of it.
Well, some people may sneer, but I...
Not only does the great saddle of mutton illustrate the Forsyte's tenacity, but it marks them as belonging in fibre and instincts to that great class which believes in nourishment and flavour and yields to no sentimental craving. for beauty.
Oh, last Sunday, sir, the Reverend Scholes was so witty, so sarcastic.
Scholes, witty, Aunt Julie?
He said, for what shall profit a man if he gain his own soul, but lose all his property?
Scholes is a humbug, isn't he?
Whispers. Whispers and smiles. What are they saying, my wife and Bosini? How her face sparkles. She often sparkles at other people, never at me. Never.
What can you mean, sir? If the Reverend Scholes is a humbug of clergymen, then anybody might be frightful.
Yes, she's like a genuine luster in that gold dress. My wife. She's agreeing with everything that fellow Bosini is saying. It always agrees with other people, but somehow never with me. Never.
Now, mushrooms, you ought to go to Smiley Bob's, Irene. He'll give them you fresh. These little men, they won't take the trouble.
I stayed on the river on my way home, Uncle James, and saw a beautiful sight for a house.
No. Where was that?
Close to Pangbourne.
Oh, I suppose you wouldn't know whether the land about there was freehold.
Oh, yes. I made inquiries.
Well, you're not thinking of buying land.
Of course not. I thought it would be such a splendid place for you or someone to build a country house.
Buying land? What do you suppose I could do buying land, building houses? I couldn't get 4% for my money.
What does that matter? You get fresh air.
You don't know the value of money.
No, and I hope I never shall.
Hope I never shall. The value of money. Julian spoiled her. None of my girls would say such a thing. What's the worth coming to? What could you expect with a father like that?
Tewkesbury ham.
With the least touch of West India.
What's all this one here about Soames and Irene, that she regrets her marriage? Well, no good having regrets. She ought to have known her own mind. No dependable woman makes such mistakes.
Strawberries, sir.
Huh? Oh, yes, a few. Just a few. Yet they say she's asking for a separate room. We all know where that ends. It isn't as if Soames drinks. And he's fond of her, I know. I mean, look at the way he's always giving her things. Yeah, but what if she takes it into her head to leave Soames? Luckily, she has no money. Ah, the ladies are leaving. Oh, she is a handsome woman. I'll have to speak to Soames, put him on his guard.
Oh, I haven't seen that statue before, Swithin.
They gave £400 to that. I suppose it's a regular work of art.
£400? That's a lot of money.
£400 for what?
This group of statuary. Italian marbles. 7 figures.
400 fiddlesticks. Don't tell me you gave 400 for that.
£400 of English money. Not a farthing less. I don't regret it. It's not common English. It's genuine Italian.
Yeah, there's a lot of work about it. It'd sell well at Jobson's.
Oh, a foreign divil that made it asked me 500. I give him 4. It's worth 8. Looked half-starved, poor devil.
Poor, seedy-looking chaps, these artists. Wonder to me how they live.
No, I don't know how they live.
Wouldn't again, too, for it.
You never knew anything about a statue, Julian. You've got your pictures, and that's all.
Stucco.
Stucco? I should like to see anything you've got in your house half as good.
Now, what do you say, Mr. Bosini? You're an architect. You ought to know all about statues and things.
Yes, Bosini. What do you say?
The work is a remarkable one.
Remarkable for what?
For its naivety.
Where's your office? Slynn Street. Well, that's close at hand. I'll call sometime.
Naivety? Yes.
I always work in my shirt sleeves.
Quiet.
And smoke a pipe.
Drink?
Not for me. I'll come straight to the point.
Yes?
If you've nothing better to do on Sunday, come down with me to Robin Hill and give me your opinion on a building site.
Are you going to build?
Perhaps. But don't speak of it. I just want your opinion.
Quite so.
You're rather high up here.
Does well enough for me, so far. You're accustomed to the swells.
What do you pay for an office like this?
50 too much.
Well, I suppose that's dear. I'll call for you on Sunday, about 11. He looks clever enough. But probably doesn't know which side his bread is buttered. Easy to deal with in money matters. The value of that land at Robin Hill is certain to go up. Within 12 miles of Hyde Park Corner, it'll always fetch more than I give for it. And it'll get Irene out of London, away from seeing too many people. Friends who put ideas into her head. She's too thick with June, that's the trouble. June doesn't like me, and the sentiment's mutual. But she'll be pleased if I keep it in the family. Her marriage might depend on it. And Irene would never stand in the way of June's marriage. That I do know. But I don't understand what Irene finds wrong with me. Every day she sits there on the sofa, hands crossed, obviously waiting for me to go. It's not as if I drink, I don't run into debt or gamble or swear. Am I violent? Are my friends rackety? Do I stay out at night? On the contrary, it's a mystery. I'm certainly not to blame. Get her out of town, that's the thing. She'll enjoy messing about with the decoration. She's very artistic. Get her away from people.
The following Sunday, Soames called for Bosinney. It was the 1st of August, a perfect day with a burning sun, cloudless sky, and in the straight, narrow road leading up the hill, their feet kicked up a yellow dust.
I told you, Bosinney, that I want this house to be a surprise, so don't say anything about it. I never talk of my affairs until they're carried through. Let women into your plans, and you never know where it'll end.
Ah, women are the devil.
Oh, so you're beginning... Ah, June's got a temper of her own. Always had. But the agent lives in that cottage. I'll have a few words with him.
Well, I dare say you've got business to talk over. I'll just go and nose about a bit.
Your people ought to come down in their price to me, considering that I shall be the first to build.
The site you fixed on, sir, is the cheapest we've got. The site's at the top of the slope, there. Dearer by a good bid.
Mind, I've not decided. It's quite possible I shan't build at all. I mean, the ground rent's very high.
Oh, well, Mr. Forsythe, I shall be sorry if you go off. I think you'll make a mistake, sir. There's not a bit of land near London with such a view as this, nor one that's cheaper, all things considered. We've only to advertise to get a mob of people after it.
Well, I haven't made up my mind. The thing will very likely go off. Ah, well, there you are, Bosinney.
Hello.
Well, I expected to see you at the site, not sprawling under an oak tree up here.
Forsythe, I found the very place for your house. Look here.
But you may be very clever, but this site will cost me half as much again.
Hang the cost, man. Look at the view.
Soames looked. In spite of himself, something swirled in his breast.
This ripe corn stretching right down to that small copse over there.
Thistledown floated around them.
That silver streak to the right there is the line of the river.
The heat danced over the corn, and pervading all was a soft, insensible hum, like the murmur of bright minutes holding revel between earth and heaven.
Fields and hedges spread as far as you can see, right over to the downs in the distance.
To live here, in sight of all this, to point it out to friends, to be able to talk about it, to possess it.
The warmth, the radiance, the glow were sinking into his senses as 4 years before. Irene's beauty had sunk into his senses and made him long for her.
Oh, I could build you a teaser here.
I dare say. You haven't got to pay for it.
For about 8,000, I could build you a palace.
I can't afford it. Oh, by the way, Bosini.
Hmm?
I've taken that site of yours, after all.
Soames Forsyte inhabited a house which did what it could. It owned a copper door knocker of individual design, windows which had been altered to open outwards, hanging flower boxes filled with fuchsias, and at the back, a great feature, a little courtyard tiled with jade green tiles and surrounded by pink hydrangeas in peacock blue tubs. Here, under a parchment-coloured Japanese sunshade covering the whole end, inhabitants or visitors could be screened from the eyes of the curious while they drank tea. On the evening of August the 8th, a week after the expedition to Robin Hill, Soames and Irene were seated at dinner.
Anybody been here this afternoon?
June.
What did she want? Come to talk about her lover, I suppose. It looks to me as if she was sweeter on him than he is on her. She's always following him about.
You've no business to say such a thing.
Why not? Anybody can see it.
They cannot. And if they could, it's disgraceful to say so.
Women are the devil.
You're a pretty wife, I must say. You're cracked about June. I can tell you one thing, now that she has the buccaneer in tow, she doesn't care tuppence about you, and you'll find it out. But you won't see so much of her in future. We're going to live in the country. But you don't seem interested?
I knew it already.
Who told you?
June.
How did she know? Ah, it's a fine thing for Bosini. It'll be the making of him. I suppose she's told you all about it.
Yes.
I suppose you don't want to go. Well, I can't tell what you want. You never seem contented here.
Have my wishes anything to do with it?
Women are the devil.
Well, I'd expected something more than this. Is it on this that I'm going to spend some £10,000? Well, it might have been worse, I suppose. She might have flared up. Perhaps it was lucky that June broke the ice. Yet she never once looked at me during dinner. It's hard when a man works as hard as I do, making money for her with, yes, an ache in the heart. To see her looking as if the walls were closing in on her. From everything else, my pictures, my silver, even my investments, I get some kind of feeling. Out of her, none. But she'll come round. That's the best of her. She's cold, but she's not sulky. I'll go and make it up presently. She'll be sitting out there in the dark.
Out in the shadow of the Japanese sunshade, she was sitting still. The lace on her white shoulders stirring with the soft rise and fall of her bosom. But about this silent creature sitting there so motionless in the dark, there seemed a warmth, a hidden fervor of feeling, as if the whole of her being had been stirred and some change were taking place in its very depths.
Nobody told me anything, so rather than disturb Soames, I thought I'd come down here.
We so hoped you would, James.
Because it's true,
undoubtedly true.
Soames is determined to build a house.
Every large, decent, middle-class family needs a place for its members to gather and discuss events. The Forsytes had such a place. It was Timothy's house in the Bayswater Road, where the three Forsyte aunts were always prepared to listen, to advise, and, if it was thought helpful and desirable, to pass on to others what had been said. It was known as Forsyte Change. For indeed, gossip and news was frequently exchanged. Nothing open. The machine was too nicely adjusted. The merest hint sufficed to set the family soul, so sympathetic, vibrating, creating the feeling that each member of the family had a stake in the family soul.
It's very good of dear Soames to employ Mr. Bosinney. But isn't it rather risky?
Mm. What did George name him? The Buccaneer.
Oh, drone. George is always drone.
However, it will all be in the family.
I suppose we must really look upon Mr. Bosinney as belonging to the family, though it does seem strange.
Well, I don't see what Soames wants with a young man like that. Mm? Nobody knows anything about him. Look, I shouldn't be surprised if Irene has put her oar in. Oh. I shall speak to her.
Soames told Mr. Bosinney he didn't wish it mentioned. He wouldn't like it talked about, I'm sure. And if Timothy knew, he'd be very vexed.
That parrot needs a tonic.
Certainly does.
Then, if you'll forgive me, Father, I'll leave you with Irene. I've got a lot of business to attend to.
Yes, of course, Soames. Never neglect business. Mm-hmm. Business?
His pictures. He likes to take a look at them.
Ah. Well, that was what I call a capital little dinner, Irene. Nothing heavy, not too Frenchified. But I can't get it at home. I pay my cook £60 a year. But she can't give me a dinner like that.
How very kind you are. Mm.
You never come round to Park Lane. What do you do with yourself all day?
The days are full of little things. Servants' problems, shopping.
I expect the fact is you haven't the time. You're always about with June. I expect you're useful to her with her young man, chaperoning and one thing and another. I suppose he comes here every day. What do you think of him? Do you think he knows his own mind? Seems to be a poor thing.
He is designing a house for Soames.
Ah, no. That brings me to what I was going to say. I don't know what Soames wants with a young man like that. Why doesn't he go to a first-rate man?
Perhaps Mr. Bosinney is first-rate.
You young people, you all think you know best. All I can say is these artistic people, or whatever they call themselves, they're as unreliable as they can be. And my advice to you is don't have too much to do with them.
He is, after all, engaged to June. He is designing the house.
I tell you my opinion. It's a pity you haven't got a child to think about and occupy you. Why don't you drive down to Hurlingham with us? Go to the theatre now and then. Your time of life, you ought to take an interest in things. You're a young woman. Well, I know nothing of it. Nobody tells me anything. Soames ought to be able to take care of himself, but if he can't take care of himself, he mustn't look to me. That's all. Well, I must be going. Yes.
Would you like one of the servants to get you a cab?
No. I'll walk. Ah, the late post's come.
Oh, darling.
Where did that kitten come from?
We found it. Up you come.
Kitten was scratched. Say goodnight to Soames for me.
I will.
And don't forget, if you want a little gaiety, well, I'll drive you down to Richmond any day.
Thank you. I won't forget. What a nice little purr you have. None for me. That's it then, darling. You come upstairs with me. Come on.
Any letters for me?
Three.
Mrs. Jolyon Forsyth at home?
Oh, yes, sir. What name shall I say, if you please, sir?
Mr. Jolyon Forsyth.
Oh, but sir...
I'm Mr. Forsyth's father.
Oh, they're all in the garden, sir. If you'll kindly take a seat, I'll tell them.
Pokey. The whole place. Air of shabbiness. There's not a single piece of furniture worth a £5 note. The water colours. All by him. He doesn't know I bought some.
Will you please go down into the garden, sir?
Young Jolyon, his wife, his two children, and his dog Balthazar were all out there under a pear tree. This walk towards them was the most courageous act of old Jolyon's life. But no muscle of his face moved. No nervous gesture betrayed him.
Dad! Well, this is... You remember my wife, Ellen?
How are you, Mrs. Forsyth?
Will you sit down?
Thank you. Wicker chairs always remind one of summer.
This is Jolyon. We call him Jolly.
Uh-huh.
And this is Holly.
Ah.
Children, this is your grandfather.
Grandfather?
This is Balthazar. He's a mongrel.
Is he, indeed?
I expect you like dogs.
Hello, Balthazar. Hello, fellow.
He's very friendly.
I can see that.
He's a cross between a Russian poodle and a fox terrier.
Is he, indeed? Well, well.
I have a big sailing boat, Grandfather. It's only a toy, of course, but it's big.
Ah, sailing boat, Jolly. Well, well.
It goes as fast as anything when it's windy.
I like boats that sail fast.
So do I.
Do you have white mice?
No.
Hmm. Your father had white mice.
Did you, Dad?
Yes, I believe I did. Once.
I like your moustaches, Grandfather.
Oh, I'm so glad, Holly.
What's on that chain, Grandfather?
It's my watch, a hunter watch.
Can I hear it tick?
Of course.
Is it gold, Grandfather?
Yes, it's gold, Holly. Listen. When you're a little older, Jolly, you might have a watch like this.
Can I have one, please?
And the sunlight played through the leaves on that little party of the three generations grouped tranquilly under the pear tree, which had long borne no fruit.
Excuse me. I really must... Excuse me.
She... It's the... If you'd let us know...
I understand you.
I'll see the tea.
Balthazar likes you, Grandfather.
And he doesn't like everyone.
And Netra, with her quaint irony, began working in old Jolyon one of her strange revolutions, following her cyclic laws into the depths of his heart. And that tenderness for little children, that passion for the beginnings of life which had once made him forsake his son and follow June, now worked in him to forsake June and follow these little things.
Good dog. Children, go in and have your tea at once.
Yes, Dad.
Yes, Daddy.
Go on then, Holly.
Go on then.
Tea, Dad. My wife's not the thing today.
You got a nice little house here. I suppose you've taken a lease of it?
Yeah.
I don't like the neighborhood. Ramshackle lot.
Yeah, we're a ramshackle lot.
I suppose I oughtn't to have come here, Joe. I get so lonely.
Oh, Dad.
It'll be a rectangular house, two stories in a quadrangle. You see? Round a covered in court, there. Now, the court will be encircled by a gallery on the upper floor. It'll have a glass roof supported by eight columns running up from the ground.
Well, it's an odd sort of house. Well, there's a lot of room cut to waste.
The principle of this house was that you should have room to breathe, like a gentleman.
Oh, yes. I see.
You see, I've tried to plan a house here with some self-respect of its own. Now, if you don't like it, you better say so. It's certainly the last thing to be considered. I mean, who wants self-respect in a house when you can squeeze in an extra lavatory? Now, you can swing a cat in here. This is for your pictures, divided from this court by curtains. Draw them back, and you'll have a space of 51 by 23.6. The rest of your pictures you can hang round the gallery upstairs or in the other rooms. In architecture, as in life, you'll get no self-respect without regularity.
Won't it look like a barrack?
Oh, I can see what it is. You want one of Little Master's houses, one of the pretty and commodious sort. By all means, try Little Master. You'll find him a capital fellow. I've known him all my life.
Well, it's certainly original. A big place.
Space, air, light. You can't live like a gentleman in one of Little Master's. He builds the manufacturers.
It's all very well, all this, but what's it going to cost?
The house, of course, should be built entirely of stone. But as I thought you wouldn't stand that, I've compromised for a facing. It ought to have a copper roof, but I've made it green slate. As it is, including metalwork, it'll cost you 8,500.
But I gave you an outside limit of 8.
Can't be done for a penny less. You must take it or leave it.
Come and lunch at Montpelier Square.
We hoped you might be coming down this afternoon, Anne, dear.
Yes, I hoped so. After all these days in bed.
My dear, I visited June today.
Will Jolyon shorten the engagement now that Mr. Bosinney is building Soames a house?
Poor Jolyon must feel very much alone.
And is Irene still asking for a separate room?
June said that if it were necessary, they should separate completely. Oh.
June and Soames have never been very fond of each other.
Swithin is having a great worry over that empty house in Wigmore Street.
I thought he had let it.
The tenant lost all his money and treated Swithin very badly.
And Timothy?
Timothy is worrying so about Soames' house.
Timothy never took to the countryside.
It's like a tree.
What is, Andy?
The family. Our family. Like a tree.
After lunch, leaving Bosinney to spend the afternoon with Irene, Soames stole off to his pictures after his Sunday habit.
Good. She's playing for him. But she'll never play for me.
At tea time, he came down to the drawing room.
Whispers and smiles. It's lucky she and Bosinney get on. He was in absurdly high spirits at lunch. She seems to be falling into line with the idea of the new house. Yes.
Well, you were both talking 19 to the dozen.
Tea, Soames.
Thank you.
A chink of sunshine through the lace of the blinds warmed her cheek, shone in the gold of her hair, and in her soft eyes. Possibly the same gleam deepened Bosinney's colour gave the rather startled look to his face.
I don't care for too much sunshine. I'll draw the blind. Bossini, can't you see your way to do it for 8,000, after all? There must be a lot of little things you could alter.
Not one.
Well, you must have it your own way, I suppose.
Yes. Well, I must care. Thank you.
Mr. Bossini.
Well, what do you think of the Buccaneer?
I don't know.
Do you think he's good looking?
Yes, very.
The shock! Overwhelming!
I never imagined such an ending.
If only it could be Captain Timothy.
Or broken to him by degrees.
I'm afraid you feel it more as time goes on.
Every morning the maid, Smither, performed for Aunt Anne the crowning ceremony of her ancient toilet. Taking from the recesses of their pure white bandbox those flat, grey curls, she placed them securely in her mistress's hands and turned her back. But there came a morning at the end of September when Aunt Anne was unable to take from Smither's hands that insignia of personal dignity. Miss Anne Forsyte had passed away in her sleep.
Your presence is requested at the funeral of Miss Anne Forsyte in Highgate Cemetery at noon of October 1st. Carriages will meet at the Bower, Bayswater Road at 10:45 a.m. No flowers by request, RSVP.
The morning came, cold with a high grey London sky. Soames, in his capacity of executor, received the guests.
Well, Soames, how do you find undertaking pays?
A chilly wind this morning, George.
The hearse started at foot's pace. The carriages moved slowly after. Each of the carriages, eight in all, held three or four of the male members of the family. Behind them came the doctor's brougham, and then at decent intervals, cabs containing family clerks and servants. And at the very end, one containing nobody at all, but bringing the total cortege up to the number of 13.
I'll have to be looking about for some ground somewhere. What arrangements have you made, Swithin?
Don't talk to me about such things, James. I could take nothing for dinner but a partridge and a pint of champagne.
She left her little property to Timothy, I believe.
Soames is the executor. There'll be no reason for the slightest agitation.
You've made your will, of course.
Maybe wise to take a lunar at it.
Would you alter it?
You know, Nicholas, I've reached the age when I think I prefer young faces.
The coffin was borne into the chapel, and two by two, the mourners filed in behind it. This guard of men, all attached to the dead by the hand of kinship, was an impressive and singular sight in the great city of London, with its overwhelming diversity of life, its innumerable vocations, pleasures, duties, its terrible call to individualism. The family had gathered to triumph over all this, to give a show of tenacious unity, to illustrate gloriously that law of property underlying the growth of their dream. The spirits of the ill woman lying in her last sleep had called them to this demonstration. It was her final triumph that she had died while the tree was yet whole.
Dust to ashes, dust to dust, in sure and certain hope of the resurrection to eternal life.
Sacred to the memory of our Lord Jesus Christ.
who shall
the daughter of the above Julian and Anne Forsythe, like who departed this life the 27th day of September 1886, aged 87 years and 4 days.
Soon, perhaps, someone else would be wanting an inscription. It was strange and intolerable. For the Forsythes had not thought somehow that Forsythes could die.
It's been altogether a satisfactory day, Irene. After the funeral, Bosini and I strolled to Hampstead and lunched at the Spaniards Inn. We spent a long time going into details about the house. It's a good thing you two get on. But then you've always understood these artist fellows. You're never at a loss for words with him.
We talk about his work.
Walk's done my liver good. I've been short of exercise for a long time. If only it wasn't for poor Aunt Anne, I'd have taken you to the theatre. As it is, we'll have to make the best of an evening at home. The buccaneer asked after you more than once.
How kind of him.
You look particularly charming tonight. I'd like you to dine in a low dress, your shoulders bare. I'll never understand how other men put up with wives in those high frocks or tea gowns when they're dining together. Irene. My Irene. My Irene.
Why, what's the matter? Cold? Irene?
In episode 1 of the Forsythe Chronicles, Galsworthy was Dirk Bogarde. Old Jolyon was Michael Horden. Soames Forsythe, Alan Howard. And Irene, Diana Quick. Fabia Drake played the part of Aunt Anne. Rachel Kempson, Aunt Hester. Rennie Asherson, Aunt Julie. Maurice Denham, James. And David March, Swithin. Young Jolyon was played by Michael Williams. June, Angela Pleasance. Bosini, Michael Cochrane. Roger, John Moffat, and Nicholas, John Gabriel. Christopher Good played George Forsythe, David Gouge, young Nicholas, Vincent Brimble, young Roger, Nicholas Gilbrook, Eustace, Danny Schiller, Parfit. The children were James Holland, Henry Power, and Emily Britton. Other parts were played by Elizabeth Mansfield, Joe Dunlop, Michael Graham Cox, and Leonard Fenton. The pianist was Mary Nash, and the director was Janet Whittaker.